quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Can we get serious now?
One thing that did happen during the 60s was some music of an unusual or experimental nature did get recorded and did get released. Now look at who the executives were in those companies at those times. Not hip young guys. These were cigar-chomping old guys who looked at the product that came and said, I don't know. Who knows what it is? Record it, stick it out of it, sells, all right. We were better off with those guys than we are now with the supposedly hip young executives who are making the decisions of what people should see and hear in the marketplace.
Success in the music business begins with a dream, a vision. This podcast will give you, the listener, the insight and tools to turn that vision into a reality. Meet the industry professionals who work day by day behind the scenes, helping to make those dreams come true. Welcome to the business side of music.
The entertainment business isn't something that our guest today, Zach Farnham of 117 Entertainment, is merely interested in, which is nice to know. It's a passion that drives him to work for his clients, ranging from Country Music Hall of Fame members such as Bobby Bear and Randy Travis to the legendary Jerry Lee Lewis. Zach also serves on the board of directors for the Nashville Association of Talent Directors, the Troubadour Society Steering Committee for the Country Music Hall of Fame, and is a member of the Country Music Association, Academy of Country Music, and the Recording Academy. A native of Rhode Island, Zach began his career as a music journalist in college in Nashville, where he began working for television publicists. Along the way, Zach would watch as other publicists and media professionals begin to influence him and shape the way that he wanted to approach his craft. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, in these, I don't want to say troubled times, but obviously we normally do this in a really nice studio. Studio shut down for a couple of weeks because of the coronavirus that's going on. So we're here in my dining room at my house, so thank you.
You've set the vibe. It worked.
Yeah, glad to hear that.
There's all of Bob's awards and plaques all over the place.
When you and I first started talking about coming on the show, we obviously weren't even beginning to think about what's going on with our industry right now. None of this was going on in our world. We had actually just survived tornadoes through the city, which, God bless Nashville, they really banded together and helped one another out, and it's been great. But now we're dealing with something that's a lot more far-reaching, and I want to talk about the relationship between the artist and the publicist, but I think at some point want to fast forward into what's going on here.
Yeah, definitely.
We saw the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo cancel. We saw South by Southwest shut down. 160-some-odd thousand tickets sold.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're seeing all sporting events, tours, other types of, you know, venues and concerts closed now. They just shut down Broadway last night, Lower Broadway. Any of you that have been to Nashville know that's where every single honky-tonk in town.
Yeah.
This has to be a publicist's nightmare at some point.
I think it gets to a certain point where you just throw your hands up. I mean, Friday afternoon was the first time that I really started worrying. And I think that was when South By canceled. And that was the first thing. And then this whole week's been like
just kind of one thing
after another.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, we were working all weekend trying to figure out what was happening and what wasn't. And then Monday, I think I went from having one cancellation to 10. Now it's up to like 25 or so. And there's nothing you can do to prepare for that. There's nothing you can do to publicize that. You know, it is what it is. Now everybody's trying to figure out, even my bigger artists who lost tens of thousands of dollars of income are trying to figure out, A, how do we keep our connection with the fans? Because live touring is the most important fan driver in this genre. And then B, how do we supplement our income, not only for us, but for our bands and our hourly or contract employees and everything like that, you know? So I think everybody's just trying to figure out how they can help each other. And
because this business model, it's never existed until now.
Yeah.
I mean, even after 9/11, we all took a deep breath and went, okay, let's figure this out. Let's literally let the dust settle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, within, I think, a week, 10 days, maybe 2 weeks at the most. You know, the country had really united, but we were back in the groove. We were making things happen. That's not the case here. We're all in a holding pattern at least for 30 days or so.
Yeah.
Maybe longer than that.
I'd say about 70 to 80% of the shows and the artists that have canceled out of concern for the safety of people attending the concerts and making sure they don't get the virus. But there's still 20% of people, specifically in the southern regions, that tried to hang on to shows as hard as they could, but now are just being shut down because of local regulations and stuff like that. And there's also the aspect of nobody wants to be the only one playing a show and be called out on social media for
it. That seems to be a concern too. I know that when South by Southwest initially, I guess they just canceled. They didn't even postpone. They just said, we're just done and we'll see you next year.
Hopefully,
exactly. The backlash was immediate.
Yeah.
It was very swift and it wasn't pretty. Is there anything that a publicist can do at that point? Or do you just kind of hold on and hope for the best? Or what do you do?
I think, first of all, you gotta clearly dial in your message, and you have to know and communicate exactly how fans are going to get refunds, or whether they're going to be applied to next year, or if they reschedule later this year. I mean, you should have all of your facts as much as you can.
Yeah.
Because the more you leave open, the more everybody's going to speculate, and the harder it will be to control the narrative in the future. So, I mean, that's across the board. Anything you're going to announce or put out, you try to lead with every detail.
I know with NASCAR, and anybody who listens to the show knows I'm a huge NASCAR fan. I know that at one point NASCAR said, well, we're going to continue to do the races. And then it was, well, we're going to continue to do the races without the fans. And within a very short window, it was like, we're postponing all the races. And if initially it was the first two races. And once again, nobody knows. We're just kind of this unknown quantifier and we're holding on.
Well, I think most of us went from being the skeptic who was like, this will all blow over, to realizing that the reasoning for shutting down these events, you know. And then I went through the process where I was like, okay, my younger acts who are playing clubs aren't really going to get affected because they're playing to crowds of 500 or less. And then they've explained it pretty well, I think. I think obviously there's still a lot of skeptics out there, but now we're at the point where we need to just lock it down so we can all keep moving on with our lives. We need to not drag this out longer because none of us can afford that.
Right. Absolutely.
Because it trickles down, you know, to the measly publicists of the world. If artists don't make money, they can't pay.
Well, and the publicists, you really are the first line of defense. You're the ones that have to get the word out there on what's...
And that's been a nightmare because when you're talking about 20, whatever we're up to, 26 shows and counting, that's 26 individual markets that we have to notify people and make sure that the venues are notifying people, and the venues all have their own shows to, you know, they probably have.
Yeah, you're not just the only one.
Yeah,
they've
crazy.
Got others, right.
And trying not to step on each other's toes and how we're messaging this and how it's crazy right now.
Are the managers and the agents and the publicists, at least from your perspective, and let's clarify something, you and I are both kind of armchair quarterbacking this, you know, from the comfort of this table here, but our managers and agents and publicists all working together at this point? Nobody's really kind of being a maverick out there on their own and saying, well, I'm going to do it this way no matter what. Now, I will preface that by reading that, and I wish I could remember who the artist was, that he was kind of like, you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. I'm going to go ahead and do these shows. I don't care what anybody thinks. Now, I don't know if that's changed since I read that this morning, but is everybody coming together and saying, okay, we have to be unified and figure this out because we don't know what we're figuring out?
At this point, pretty much.
Yeah.
I had an artist that was opening for one of those artists that was trying to plow ahead on this coming Friday, and that even fell through. I think it's starting with the venues because all the local governments are deciding regulations and shutting them down. So it's starting from the top, if you will, and then trickling down. And if you have a show, like I've got an artist who is routed out to a college rodeo banquet in Oklahoma, and he's routed at two casinos along the way, and both those casinos have shut down. So that creates a chain of reaction where we can't even afford to go out and do that college rodeo show. And that'll probably end up getting canceled anyway, but now it creates a routing issue for us. So yeah, I mean, the agents and the promoters are talking. I know on the higher levels with the bigger tours, they pretty much dialed in all their plans immediately, because as soon as this thing started, all the big guys in LA, the AEGs, the Live Nations, the CAAs, William Morris's, they've all created this task force of all their leaders who were keeping in touch with each other and making plans. So they led the drive, if you will, on how this was going to be handled. And then 95% of my acts are independent. So it sort of trickled down there to us figuring out things for ourselves.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and we'll come back. We're going to dig into a little bit about the relationship between the artist and the publicist, and at what point the publicist fits into the artist's career. In the studio with us today, Zach Farnham of 117 Entertainment.
Hey there, this is Claire Bowen, and you're listening to The Business Side of Music.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
Hi everyone, I'm Larry Butler, and I want to send you a free digital copy of my new book, The Singer-Songwriter Rulebook. 101 ways to help you improve your chances of success. That's right. Everything you need to know to launch your career as a singer-songwriter, all based on my 40 years in the live performance arena. And believe me, I've seen it all. In my book, you'll find the 10 things you have to deal with before even thinking about becoming a singer-songwriter performer. You'll also learn about the 5 things every singer-songwriter can do this weekend to make their live show better. 5 things I can guarantee that you are not doing already. Plus, there's tips on songwriting and staging, photo and video shoots, publishing, merch, dozens of other topics, all written for people who don't particularly like to read. And again, it's free. Just go to the Business Side of Music website homepage and look for my book cover. Click on it, and a free digital copy of my book will be yours. I'm Larry Butler, and I approve of this message. Thanks.
Hi, this is Tom Sabella, the creator, founder, and co-producer of the Business Side of Music podcast. It's loyal listeners such as yourself that make our podcast successful. Take the time to sign up for our weekly newsletter. Not only does it contain information on upcoming podcast episodes, but also informative tidbits on the music industry and even bonus items that we give away. All you have to do is sign up at businesssideofmusic.com and we will send you Larry Butler's new singer-songwriter rulebook. That's it. All you have to do is go to businesssideofmusic.com, sign up, and we will send you Larry Butler's new book. Thanks to all our loyal listeners. We love you.
You're listening to the Business Side of Music.
Back in the studio, Zach Farnham, 117 Entertainment, sitting across the table from me.
Thanks for saying it right. Nobody ever says our name right. I always get 117 or 117.
Hey,
it's 117.
Just reading the notes. Glad it worked out. How long have you been a publicist now?
Oh, something like 6-7 years.
Yeah.
6 years, I think. Been a wild ride.
And once again, some great clients when you consider, you know, Randy Travis, The Killer, Jerry Lee Lewis, and of course, Bobby Bear. You understand why those artists need publicists because of the level of their career and where it's at. At what point does a publicist fit into an artist's career? Now, we talked during the break about this one artist who's kind of defying all the government regulations and, you know, he's going to, you know, do this show. And I'm not going to mention the artist's name, but that makes the publicist's job a lot harder. But obviously, a publicist has to step in and do something because there's just going to be damage control no matter what. At what point do you see yourself fitting in, especially with that independent artist in their career?
I think it's important to start very early. So I look at my job with two sort of areas. We do public relations, which is where damage control, messaging, brand development, all of that fits in. And then we do publicity, which is artist is touring, artist is putting out an album, artist is putting out a music video, getting the word out about those projects or whatever we're trying to promote. So there's two core things we do. Where I like to start earlier on acts is on the PR side, really helping brand development, dialing in what the message is, helping to create strategies for creating music and creating marketing tools and everything like that. The problem is baby acts, I'll call them development acts, and I'm talking pre-label or just getting signed to a label, there's not much money there
right.
to spend. So it's hard for us to get in on the front level. I find it very important to be able to grow with the artist. So I do a lot of cheap or free labor because, in my opinion, it's going to make the whole strategy more fluent when you are out doing radio tours and Fallon and all the big things. You know, you're going to be, plus there's also the relational thing. Everybody always talks about the relationship between an artist and a manager, but I think the relationship between the artist and the publicist is equally as important, because if you get arrested or if you get in some hot water, the first person you're going to call is probably going to be your publicist. Your publicist has to know your voice. I have to know my artist's voice. I have to know what they would say or how they would react to something.
You have to get in their head.
Yeah. And I think that's true of PR across the board. You really have to know your brands or your clients really, really well, because you're their extension to the world.
And you're marketing really a product line. It's not just an artist, but you're, when you say their voice, you have to know what their voice is, what they're going to say, but it's a product. You know, it's not just them, it's their music,
it's their brand.
And you have to get out there and, as you said, get in front of it. I worked with an artist for a few years who had some of those legal issues. And I remember getting a phone call from the manager, because at that point we didn't have a publicist for that artist. And the manager at 2 o'clock in the morning is bailing the artist out of jail, or, you know, trying to get in front of the press to figure it out. You're available 24/7, basically.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I read on your bio that you sometimes, I guess, maybe I'm paraphrasing, you look forward to those 3:15 in the morning emails.
I guess the adrenaline pumping, for sure. If you get a call in the middle of the night that so-and-so just crashed their car.
Fill in the blanks. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a wild ride.
The artist who really can't afford a publicist, but maybe they find someone such as yourself to help them along, should they at least have a project done or have a tour in place? I mean, just the bare bones,
yeah,
you have to have things moving.
You have to have something to promote, something ready to go. I don't really paint with a bare canvas. You know, usually I'm given a set of tools and I got to rearrange the puzzle and help figure it out. Most artists don't come in until they've got something. I always tell new clients, I'm not the publicist you're going to hire for a one-off. You're not just going to create something, bring it to me and tell me to get it out there. You know, I'm going to be, and that's not to be a jerk. There's got to be a strategy for everything, and you need input from various people, managers, producers. Don't think like a publicist does. Don't think like a radio promoter does. There has to be influence from various members of the team to be able to properly put something out.
And not only that, but you have to have something to work with.
Yeah.
If it's just a lump of clay, it's not doing you very well.
Mm-hmm.
The vessel at least needs to be created.
I will say that when an artist comes to me and they know who they are, it makes my job a lot easier, because I never want to be the guy that's shaping the artist into something they don't internally want to be.
Right.
You know, and I think that happens quite often in this business. I don't think it happens as much so anymore, because labels aren't doing as much artist development as they used to. No offense to the labels listening.
The truth is they're not, because they
right.
just don't have the budgets like... You know, when I was at the labels in the 90s, and Larry Butler, who's one of our sponsors. Yeah, he and I, we rode along the same path. We were both managers of artist developments at our respective labels. You had budgets back then, or maybe I should say we didn't have budgets. You just spent what you needed to get it
right.
done. Those days are gone, and they're gone forever.
Well, and they're signing artists who already have fan bases built up, already have music out 8 or 9 times out of 10. So theoretically, those artists they know who they are. They're pretty solid in their beliefs and what they want out of their career.
And their social media is in place for the most part. Yeah, and they've got a good fan base mm-hmm. that they can derive from.
But to my point, you used to have, and I'm talking the 90s and the early 2000s especially, kids that would get picked up by A&R teams and or come off a reality show like American Idol and get thrown into a record deal too early where they don't know who they are.
Thank you.
And then they run headfirst into a wall of brick, you know, and that causes issues.
We've had this conversation, I say we, it's people that we talk to all the time. We sit down and we start talking about, you know, American Idol's a prime example. Name how many success stories there are off that show. Been a lot of winners out of, you know, X number of seasons, but there have been almost maybe a handful of artists that have gone on to have success. With that being said, you can still have success without being on those types of shows or without having a major record deal. I guess it's just at what, where do you set the bar and what is success?
Success is relative. And I tell every artist I work with this, you don't have to have 20 number one hits to be successful. You don't have to be on a late night TV show to be successful. You determine your own success, and your fan base determines your own success. If you can go tour and make a living touring and selling merch and selling music, then you're a step ahead of most people trying to do this game. I think it's hard when artists are constantly pursuing fame or stardom. It's hard for them to produce authentic content. In country music, I find especially that authenticity is the most important thing for success.
Being real. Mm-hmm. Being exactly who you are.
Look at Texas. Those guys down there, people that I guarantee you 95% of your audience has not heard of, are making a huge living.
Just in Texas.
Pat Green's a legend down there, and all I know about him growing up in Rhode Island is Wave on Wave. I mean, but he's a legend down there.
Yeah. And those are the guys that they can work the Texas market and maybe the Oklahoma, New Mexico market and have a solid career their whole lives.
And it's expanding now up the Midwest. You got Red Dirt stations throughout Colorado and up that area. But yeah, it's a niche market.
The Texas market is unlike any other, mm-hmm. I think, in the world.
But you have many markets. Like I've been to Ireland and I have a lot of friends in Ireland. And those guys just tour Ireland and they make a living doing that. Granted, there's not millions of dollars in it. But if you're money driven or stardom driven, your chances of being successful are slim to none.
You've narrowed your feasibility down quite a bit.
Totally.
Yeah.
And that's not to say you shouldn't always reach for the stars and try to be the best you can be. But create music. Create authentic music that's you.
That's a great line. We're going to take another break, get another word in for our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more with Zach Farnham here with 117 Entertainment.
Hi, this is Angela McHouston, and you're listening to The Business Side of Music.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
Wow, I just joined the Music Starts Here community. This is a truly hidden gem for anyone in the music business. Whether you live in Nashville or anywhere else in the world, Music Starts Here is like a GPS for your music career. This is the place to be if you want to get advice and direction from some seriously talented musical people who have been where you want to go. Music news, events, and a great big community with resources for artists, songwriters, musicians, studio and tech, along with music business advice from pros in the industry, all on one site. Make sure you get your free profile now. Go to www.musicstartshere.org. That's musicstartshere.org.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
Back in the studio, Zach Farnham, 117 Entertainment. You and I met vicariously through Doak Turner, Music Starts Here. Some months ago, you were actually working on the Randy Travis tour that we went to the press release there.
Yeah, right. We met there.
How's Randy doing, first of all? And he, for clarification, he wasn't actually going to get on stage and perform. It was his band and someone else was doing it. But he was going to be as hands-on as he could be.
Yeah, we actually did three shows, one of them at the Ryman here in Nashville. And it was really cool. He and Mary were up on stage and he was interacting with the audience and interacting with his band guys who he hasn't been on tour with in 6 years. And I think his energy radiated enough to fill that gap of where his voice wasn't there. And just James Dupre just knocked it out of the park. I don't think anybody left, nobody in that audience left disappointed. It's a really cool concept. We're doing another one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is there more in the pipeline?
Yeah, there's more to come. I think we just announced one in New Mexico on May 30th. Knock on wood, hopefully that happens. But yeah, I think we've found out that it works better in casino settings and stuff like that. Did one in Gulfport at a casino. We probably could have done 3 nights there. It was packed. The audience was rowdy. It was a really good time.
That had to have made Randy feel so good, too.
Yeah, man. Randy, he needed to get back to the fans as much as the fans needed him to get back to them.
Yeah.
You know, we've been doing a lot of appearances here in Nashville and near their house in Texas. A few things all over the country, but we really hadn't done anything in most of these markets. So I think it's trying to figure out how we can make enough money to be able to go to the market and get it done.
Right.
You know, because I think the fun times we have with the band, I mean, it's all the original guys, even the tour manager, Jeff Davis.
Yeah, I've known Jeff for years. Yeah. His son and my son used to play hockey together.
Jeff's
so.
Dad was Conway Twitty's tour manager.
Yeah.
Jeff's been with Randy since nearly the beginning. So having him and the band out, it was just really good. We did miss Rob Houston, who just passed away yesterday from battling ALS. He was not able to make it out on the tour. And then LD, the lead guitarist, was not able to make it out on the tour. But he played the Ryman.
From a publicist standpoint, Randy would be probably that very unique. You're not going to see it too often because he really can't speak for himself.
Mm-hmm.
His wife communicates through him.
She does a great job.
Does that make your job more challenging? Or
for sure, yeah. You know, I don't have any artists that are plug and play, if you will. I don't have a George Strait where I'm mostly saying no to things.
Right.
All of my artists have unique challenges about them. And yeah, Randy not being able to communicate what he's thinking is tough. We have to work around that. And it's taken a lot of communication between him and Mary and I on getting him involved in the interviews and figuring out how can we have you, Randy, answer questions without talking and with kind of channeling your answers through Mary, but still interacting.
And then not being the same, you know, we wrote these down. These are
right.
the rote answers you're going to give.
And we started by doing that and it worked for the first few years, but he just wanted to be more hands-on with everything.
He wants to be Randy.
Because he's all up here in the head. He knows everything. He's smarter than you and me. I mean, Mary will forget. They'll be out running errands and she'll forget to pick something up. He'll remind her. He just can't communicate it, which I can't even imagine that. It's been hard. I will say a lot of people in the industry have been on the press side have been really good about it. And they've been willing to work with us and work around it. I think everybody recognizes how iconic he is and how his music has influenced thousands upon thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people.
He has influenced hundreds of thousands and millions of fans. You know, we've all seen that, we've witnessed that. And I think he has a very unique situation that everybody realizes that physically, medically, you know, he'll never be the Randy that we all knew and love when he started out and was such a huge success, but everybody still loves him. And he can still, you know, he's one of those guys, you can just put him in a chair, kind of like at the press conference we were at that day with you and his wife and Randy. We're all like, this is so flipping cool because it's Randy Travis. You don't get that opportunity very often with too many artists. If, you know, maybe there's a few of them out there that you could do that with at the same circumstances. Let's go in another direction for a minute. The artist, no matter what point their career is in, we have a basic understanding of when they seem to be able to come in. But what are you looking for? What are you looking for? A particular actor, artist? Are you looking for a certain style of music? Or are you just looking, do they have their act together? You know, is it there? Is there something ready to move forward with?
I never take on a project that I don't think I can connect with. I try to spend a good week or two with the music before I sign on to something.
Which is so different because I know so many publicists who will just, you know, they're looking for the check. Now, I should preface that by saying if they're big in rock, they're not going to take on a bluegrass act. If they're big in urban, they're not going to take on a country act. You know, it has to fit within their wheelhouse.
Well, and some publicists can work stuff that they're not jazzed up about, or they can get themselves excited about something. And that's fine. That's great. If you can do that, more power to you. You're probably going to make more money than I am. But I can't do that. Legitimately, I have taken on artists that I thought I could get behind, and then it just fizzled out. So I stopped doing that.
Yeah.
I really have to believe in the music. And it's all over the place. You know, I love traditional country. I love a steel guitar and a fiddle. But on the flip side, like, I have a girl named Kaylee Shore. She's an amazing, amazing young artist. She was the only country album on the New York Times Best Albums list last year. She's more of like if Avril Lavigne were country, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
She's definitely more pop rock flair, emo flair, punk flair, whatever you want to call it. That is not traditional country at all, but I freaking love it. It's great. I believe in her, everything she's putting out, the honesty behind her music. So I think it comes down to, again, not to harp on this, but authenticity to me. If I believe you're an authentic person, even if sometimes it doesn't come out in the first project or even the second project, but if I see it there, then it's going to interest me.
Does she have a deal? A record deal?
No.
So she's out on her own.
Yeah.
And she makes the New York Times list.
The only country album.
Yeah.
She beat out Maren Morris, The Highwaymen, all the hot country albums last year. She beat out for that spot. And, you know, I think that's dependent on the critics' opinions and their taste in music. But it's also, it speaks well to the team she's assembled, their drive, our drive, and the music she's putting out.
And I want to ask you that. Who got that music in front of this person that made this decision? Because that's big. When you get something in front of the New York Times or the Rolling Stone magazine or whatever it is, that can make or break you in a lot of cases, with or without a record deal.
That's a complicated thing because I don't want to take credit for it because it took a lot of things aligning to make it happen.
Right.
But it was a mixture of us setting our target, not to give away too much of our strategy, but it starts with an artist making great music. It goes into a team of people, including a manager and an agent and a publicist and a marketing team, setting goals. One of those goals, the top goal being get in front of the New York Times, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And then it takes people running with those goals to have the gumption to get it done.
Right.
You know? And then it takes the critic believing in it. There's that unknown thing that you can't control.
That component right there, you can run that up the flagpole.
Yeah.
But if the critic doesn't get behind it, right, doesn't embrace it.
And I think Why Was She the Only Country Album is probably a mixture of some publicists didn't pitch him on their projects. Some publicists maybe did, and he just went with what he went with. He connected with the music.
I think you may have had something to do with it.
Well, thank you.
Where do you see yourself next? Do you have someone out there that's kind of up and coming, getting ready to be in the spotlight? Or
I have a amazing growing list of young acts. I got into the business working mostly with legacy acts. I was working with Dolly Parton and T. Graham Brown, T.G. Shepherd, Don McLean. I had a lot of older acts. And when I started 117, I sort of almost fell into that same pattern of having significantly older acts, which is great. I think they're very important.
And they can open up a lot of doors.
Yes, yes. But they also need publicists. They need team members because that's a huge audience that they're catering to that I don't think our industry capitalizes on or monetizes enough. So they need that support. But you're right. They also do. They set a precedent for what your business is going to be like. But I decided probably a year into owning my own business that I wasn't just going to be a one-trick pony, and I wanted to expand my roster dynamically in every sense. I wanted females and males and older people and younger people and people in the middle and traditional act, non-traditional acts, and sort of all over the place. So I've got a little bit of everything. Nobody on my roster really competes with each other in a lot of senses, because they're all, they've got their individual buckets. I'm not going to list them because they're, I think we're up to like 24 clients, artists. You can see it at 117group.com. www.117group.com. All of our clients are listed on there, but we had three singles come out last week. We have an album next week from a great guy, James Robert Webb, amazing artist out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, produced by Buddy Cannon. Classic, amazing producer, just produced Reba McEntire's last album and Willie Nelson's ongoing albums. I think Willie releases like three albums a year lately, so he keeps Buddy busy. But so that's coming out next week. Bobby Bear, we pulled an album out of the vault. I don't know if you saw this, but Bear recorded an album in 78 of all Shel Silverstein songs.
No.
Yeah. And Bear had done quite a few albums that were all written by Shel, but this one in particular was one that the head of the label did not like for various reasons, but also he and Bear had friction from the start. He said something like, "This album won't see the light of day over my dead body," or something like that.
Right.
And it got shut into the vault, and Bear left and went to Columbia and went on to make a bunch of great other albums and used a couple of the songs on those other albums, but the actual, this album and a lot of the songs on the album have never been heard before. So obviously RCA was eventually bought up by Sony. I got Sony to pull it out of the vault, dust it off, and digitize it. Here we are, a year and a half later, about to release it.
I can't wait to hear that. That's going to be great.
I should have brought you a copy. I'll get you one. Called Great American Saturday Night.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait to hear it. That'll be cool.
A few cuss words on it. So if you don't like that, don't listen.
Hey, we're a podcast. We can get away with that.
That's right. That's right.
Zach, thanks for being on the show. This has been great.
This was great. Thanks, Bob.
The Business Side of Music is the creation of Tom Sabella and Tracy Snow and is produced by Bob Bender. The Business Side of Music is recorded at Music Dog Studios in Los Angeles, California and Nashville, Tennessee. Production sound designed by Keith Stark. Voiceover and promo by Lisa Busan.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.